Warning, the Catholic Man Show is about to begin. If you're looking for a dull, feel-good religion, or clap your hands, sit around the campfire, kumbaya, you've come to the wrong place. We are dealing with toxic levels of authentic masculinity. I would say good luck, but luck is for pagans.
And welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. I am Adam Minahan, sitting here with David Niles y Juan Posada in the studio. We have a very special guest, awarded the most, how do we want to phrase this? The most frequent guest of the Catholic Man Show Award goes to Patrick Coffin. Patrick, thanks for hanging out with us today.
It's always an honor. Numero cuatro? This is my fourth time here?
Four.
Quattro.
Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. Feels like at least 17. No, I love being with you guys. So thanks for having me. It's always an honor and a ton of fun besides.
Yes, we will definitely be having a lot of fun.
Fun will be had by all, I think, yeah.
Hopefully so. At least I'm going to for sure.
I'm pretty mad about it all, but we'll get into that later.
It's spelled P-H-U-N too, because it's extra fun. Fun cubed.
I see. That's how that works. Patrick, I want to share this, what you said to us. You sent us an email today with a phenomenal word that I think should be shared. More people need to know about this word, especially the listeners of the Catholic Man Show.
Yes.
And
the word is anti-disestablishmentarianism. No, that's not true. For a long time, that was the longest word in the English dictionary. No, the word is uxorious, and it's from a Latin root whose specifics I've forgotten, but it refers to domestic duties. So stuff that has to be done around the house, husbandly things. And so it's a good word to kind of drop in there from time to time.
Google had a really good definition for it. It was something about,
I think I had it,
doing things or having instead of me getting it wrong, let's just do it, get it right. Quickly, Adam. Quickly.
Faster. Oh, no, I had... Okay, here it is. Having or showing an excessive or submissive fondness to one's wife.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that I guess that's a kissing cousin of the way I've been using the word, which is the most important thing here. sort of the willingness to accomplish a honeydew. Aaron. Yeah, very nice. To please one's wife.
Exorious.
I like that.
Yep. So anyway, I hope you're all exorious today.
Is that even correctly? Is that... used here. Correctly?
I don't know.
Anyway, if this is your first time listening to the Catholic Man Show, we open, review, and enjoy a man beverage. The second half or second segment, we highlight our man gear, and then we have a manly topic discussed. Buffalo Trace is the bourbon that we're having today. I think that we may have we had Buffalo Trace before? I can't remember.
I do not know. We may have done it very, very early on.
The thing about Buffalo Trace, Patrick...
But you know what? I feel like we've all grown since then.
We have.
So maybe we should give it another shot.
The thing about Buffalo Trace is that because it's become such a big distillery, obviously it's distilling Pappy Van Winkle, Eagle Rare, Weller's...
Blanton's.
Yeah, Blanton's. So it's becoming so popular that the price is obviously going up, and it's becoming... harder to get, especially at least in Oklahoma. So if you can stock up, because it's a good investment.
Yeah it is a fine whiskey.
Yeah, you should stock up, because the government's taken away our right to have tops on those bottles, so you can't even buy them at Walmart anymore. So stock up, preppers. You know, you bring up something, maybe we can angle into the topic or however and whenever you want, but I'm very confused by economics. You just said something, Adam, which makes perfect sense the first time I hear it. And then I think about it the second time, and it makes me scratch my head. You said they're becoming very popular, and they're increasing and multiplying. They become more available, which means the price goes up. And I thought, wait a second, I thought Economics 101 said the opposite, that scarcity means the price goes up. Like a rare diamond is more money. But if diamonds were just colored rocks that shined, they'd be cheap.
Well, so I think the amount, like, people are buying it quicker, but they're not actually producing to meet the demand.
In this case, I believe they are increasing the supply, but at a slower pace than the demand has increased.
The
funny thing, though, is that diamonds really are just shiny rocks. That's all that they are.
Wait, I thought research indicated that they were a girl's best friend. I don't know what eating up.
There is some fringe research.
Yeah, they are forever. All things go back to James Bond.
Well, you know, I forget the comedian who's like, was making fun of the K commercials over time, like, diamonds, it'll take her breath away. Diamonds are forever. And he's like, really what they're saying is diamonds, that ought to shut her up. I wish I could remember. Who's the guy who was, they call me Tater Salad? Ron White? I think it was Ron White, but anyway.
Well,
he said that, not me, okay? I would never say that.
Patrick, while we have you on, I have a question for you that I've been kind of itching to ask you, and I think it'll be a good segue into...
He's got a rash. I mean, it's...
Yeah, it's really
been
bad.
Itching it a lot.
It's only itching. Leave it alone.
Okay, okay. But I've been wanting to ask you about this, and this may be a good segue into maybe the Coffin Report.
Yeah.
And kind of what you have going on at the Coffin Show, the Patrick Coffin Show.
Yeah.
Have you noticed recently that late night television has just been atrocious? That, you know, I'm a big fan of Paul Harvey. I'm a big fan of Johnny Carson. Like, I like the old school. I think they tell stories really well. I think they interview really well. Last night, or maybe two nights ago, I turned on Jimmy Fallon late night just in time to see him keg stand the Stanley Cup beer out of the Stanley Cup, and I'm sitting there thinking, like, are you kidding me? This is what we're watching. This is entertainment now. A host chug beers on a handstand on the Stanley Trophy. Like, what is? Could you imagine Johnny Carson doing anything remotely close to that? Like, what has happened?
Zero. Adam, you couldn't have thrown me a softer ball, my brother. Yeah, is nothing sacred. I mean, Stanley Cup, growing up in Canada, of course, that was like the ultimate manly prize for incredible hard work. Nowadays, you might as well just hand Stanley Cups to 7-year-olds before they even have their first game. Here, you know, the show-up award.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes, late-night TV has really plummeted, and I think the high mark was the era of Johnny Carson. If you like Carson, you'll love his predecessor, Jack Parr. Jack Parr had a writer named Dick Cavett who went on to become one of Johnny Carson's competitors. And every Jack Parr episode I can get my hands on, I watch and I rewatch because he's such a skilled interviewer. He's respectful. He's interesting. He's funny, but it's not about condom jokes. He doesn't try to steal attention from the guest. He was friends with the Nixon family and the Kennedy family. So he was kind of 360.
Wow.
Kind of hard to read. Yeah, P-A-A-R. He's the second host of The Tonight Show. The first host before him was Steve Allen. And then he walked away at the top of his game 9 years later. And he's a very erudite guy. And so you can get – public libraries have the Jack Parr show. It's called Smart TV, I think. And quick sidebar about Jack Parr. In 1961, Reverend Billy Graham was on his show. And he's, you know, pencil neck, suit, kind of handsome and very, very gently evangelizing Jack Parr. That's another thing, Jimmy Fallon or all these late night clowns now, they would never permit a Rick Warren or a Bishop Barron. Right?
It's
a joke. And on that episode where Billy Graham appears, Jack Parr, who used to end his show with a little travelogue, kind of a home movie of the Parr family, he tells a story about his wife getting airsick in an airplane while on vacation in Hawaii, and they're flying from island to island. She said, "Honey, we got to land the plane." So he instructs the pilot to land, and they land on this little island, and they get out, little airstrip. And he said, "We got treated like royalty. They did not recognize me. They didn't know who I was." And then they learned about the foundation of this hospital that took care of lepers.
Huh.
Okay, so he tells his camera crew from New York to go back to this island called Molokai and do a home movie about the founder, who then was Father Damien Wester, the Belgian priest. This is 1961. The end of that Jack Parr episode is Father Damien's Tombstone and Jack Parr doing a voiceover saying this very similar word. I'm summarizing. Brothers and sisters, I am not a Roman Catholic, but the Catholic Church could do very well to make this man a saint. And now he's a saint. So
no kidding.
Jack Parr, wow. Secular outsider, right?
Yeah.
So that was the sidebar. Yes, my wife and I unplugged from television about 8 years ago, maybe 9 years ago. And every time I go back to the genre of shows that I used to enjoy, I don't like them. When I'm at friends' house, I'm cringing, wincing my way through. They're noisy. They're overproduced. Mm-hmm. Everything is about just foolishness, double entendres, flirting with the guests.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's terrible. And I don't miss it. So I agree.
And that would lead us to the Coffin Report.
Yeah, the Coffin Report is an inside Coffin Nation feature. I've been doing the Patrick Coffin Show podcast, which is free. The audio iteration will always be free. Coming up on my 80th episode, and we're getting lots of interest in a whole bunch of different countries. We've got regular downloads in 100 countries. My fourth interview with Jordan Peterson is now on YouTube at like 360,000 views, just one interview. So I seem to be hitting a nerve. And so we're opening a membership site called Coffin Nation for members, three levels of engagement. And I know this is going out during the last week. So anyway, people want to check out the trailer and find out more. It's coffinnation.com. We'll talk more on the other side, maybe.
Sweet. When we get back, we'll pick up where we left off, which is a good place to pick up. Hang in there. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. Here with Adam Minahan, we are joined by the ineffable Patrick Coffin. It's my new word. I'm going to use it every episode for the rest of my life.
This will be torturous.
We are joined in the peanut gallery as well.
Yes.
By the ineffable Juan Posada.
Doesn't it sound like a delicious Mexican dish? I love the Juan Posada here.
Ooh, I'll have seconds, please.
Great to be here, guys.
Yes.
So
anyway,
we're having a little bit of Buffalo Trace bourbon, which bourbon can only be made in America. Even if the whole recipe is made exactly how bourbon is made, if it's not made in America, it cannot be called bourbon. Did you know that?
I did not, but that's manifest destiny right there.
So,
well, it's the same thing with a lot of things. Like, even if you make something like a scotch,
right,
it's got to be made in Scotland. Champagne.
Gotta be made Champagne, France.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's sparkling wine.
Fanta.
Yeah.
Fanta. Yeah. Great example.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were talking about media and late night TV and stuff. And what I'm trying to do with Coffin Nation, which is an affectionate name, I hated it when I first heard it. I was like, ugh, great. Egomania Central. But it's sort of the nickname of folks who agree with me that the culture since the early 60s has gone to, what's the word? Oh, yeah, pot. And we have to do something about it because a lot is happening that is very bad on our watch. And our kids are watching how we're reacting to these things. And Jack Parr in that era of the early 60s is a great example of a kind of a before photo. So the Coffin Report is my monthly kind of take on the news with a Catholic lens. It's not Catholic media. It's media that's Catholic. A slight difference there that means a lot to me.
Philosophical difference there.
But I think that a lot of media consumers are not used to seeing a presentation of the Catholic worldview that's funny and that's full of joy and is not uptight and is not prudish, as exemplified by the Catholic Man Show. I mean, you guys, you work to live, not the other way around, you know? So
totally.
This, the glass clinking joie de vivre, you know, this is supposed to be a good time. This is not our final home, but Jesus came to give us life and life to the full. So, yeah, so this Transform You, I've interviewed Jordan Peterson. There's one last conversation with him that I've not released. It's about his self-authoring suite. That's going to be available at coffinnation.com. Friday, June 15th is the end of our first door open. So after that, you can get on the waiting list for 6 months from
so
now.
So that is tomorrow. That's tomorrow.
Yeah, that would be mañana, midnight Pacific time. So if it's 2:59 a.m. Eastern time and you're in New York and you're feeling woozy, it's not too late. You've got 1 minute left.
Pull the trigger.
Anyway, all the goodies about membership is at coffinnation.com. So thank you for asking.
Sweet. Let's jump into the gear, the man gear. This is the second segment. This is what we do. The second segment is jump into the man gear. This will actually kind of coincide with what our topic is going to be. I think, Patrick, we'll let you introduce the gear, and we can kind of go from there.
The gear is a book that had a huge impact on me, and I was privileged to interview the author, Father Thomas Morrow, M-O-R-R-O-W, like Tom Morrow. See? It's a good mnemonic cue. The book is called, just flashes here for the camera, it's called Overcoming Sinful Anger. And the subtitle is How to Master Your Emotions and Bring Peace to Your Life. It is a thin volume. I'll just turn it sideways here. It's not a one sitting read, but it is a easy reread. And I just felt like Father Morrow was talking to me directly. I'm a pretty happy-go-lucky guy, but I have struggled with anger. I grew up in an alcoholic home, which means I don't know what I'm supposed to feel about anything. And when you grow up in an environment where there was unpredictable levels of anger and chaos, I learned as a boy to use anger as a kind of protective defense. Mm-hmm. If I could throw a tantrum, I had some control over these big people. Mm-hmm. I could kind of get my way. And, of course, that backfires as a long-term strategy because you cannot sustain good relationships if you're perpetually angry. Funny how people don't like angry people.
Yeah.
And so it took me a long time and friendship with Jesus Christ and Wisdom of the Saints and books like this to help me understand that anger does have the emotion of anger is neutral. It's neither good nor bad. It's the desire for restoration and justice. So there's nothing wrong with being angry. It's if someone cuts you off or if you've been hurt and wounded, sometimes if you see someone being harmed, anger is a good, it's a sign of health. Our Lord was not exactly reading a magazine when he picked up the whips to, you know, the cords to whip people and cleanse the temple. Mm-hmm. However, because we have fallen natures, we can't compare ourselves with Christ cleansing the temple because all of his motives were absolutely pure.
Right.
And I find men in particular are rather good at justifying their temper tantrums. Mm-hmm. They'll say, oh, I'm Irish, or oh, I got my Italian up.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. If you're a baptized intentional disciple, you have to realize that anger that is accompanied by the desire for revenge is sinful. And if you're exploding all the time, that's something you need to bring to confession. Yeah, therapy can be great, but some therapy can backfire. If you go, just Google, you know, anger techniques counselors. I mean, some of these people make angry folks pound pillows and scream the name of their dads or whatever.
It's real healthy, you know? Real healthy there.
Yeah, like it's sort of, and this is why a lot of the saints closely identified anger with lust.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. both anger and lust they represent a lack of control that leads to an immediate thrill. You know, there's a thrill to losing your temper. Mm-hmm. It's exciting. You've got you see white and it's just, you know, your heart rate goes up and so on. But really, it makes you blind to how it hurts other people, especially your kids and your wife who are observing. And a lot of folks, I can relate to this to a certain degree, their default is a kind of, it's like slow burning anger. They're just about ready to, they're not throwing things, they're not physically violent, but they're perpetually almost like picking a fight in a way. Mm. And in addition to our gear here, I'll mention a movement. The founder of which has also helped me a lot, Dr. Abraham Lowe. The movement's called Recovery International. It's where the term recovery comes from. It's a post-World War II program for people who struggle with emotional impulsivity. And, mm-hmm. and
my three-year-old has that.
Yeah. Well, as a recovering three-year-old, you know, I'm always
recovering to you.
Need of lessons here. Yeah. So Dr. Lowe would say things like, feelings can be distressing, but they're never dangerous. Hmm. And the best way to, and this is something Father Moreau talks about, I think it was Francis de Sales, possibly St. Jerome, the best, actually, he also draws from Roman pagans like Seneca. And I think it was, this is a Seneca quote, the best cure or the best treatment for anger is delay. Just wear the mask and delay. Say, if you're having a fight with your wife, honey, I'm going to go to the mall. I need to get away for half an hour. You're not in denial. You're not, it's not passive aggression.
Right.
You just need some dust to settle and you get perspective. So that wild-eyed desire to be right, you know?
Some of the worst decisions I've made have been emotional. Emotional decisions, like with, like irrational emotional decisions. You know, I'm hot, like I'm upset. I'm gonna make this decision and it ends up being the wrong one.
Yep.
Patrick, we've been, Dave and I have been thinking about doing this kind of episode on anger for quite a while, but we felt like that we needed to bring somebody else in to talk about it as well because Dave and I are relatively, we don't struggle with anger too much. As far as like the outbreaks, we're pretty even keeled for the most part.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm a people pleaser. Like I want people to be happy with what I'm doing. I like peace. You know, I want them to like me. I want them to enjoy like our conversation. I'm a people pleaser.
Yeah.
One thing though that I struggle with, and it leads into anger, I think, is that if I feel like there's an injustice that has been done to me, or that that somebody said something, and I'm like, that is not right. It's not right for them to say that. I hang on to that just by myself, and at night when I'm laying down, I'm trying to go to sleep. All I can think about is how Dave said something stupid about me in front of everybody and made me look like an idiot. You know, and like, why would he do that?
You go through the script again and again.
Over and over and over and over again. And like, what should I have said? What should I have done differently? Yeah. Why did he do it that way? Why did he say, you know, and I just sit there and let it mull over. And all of a sudden at 2 a.m., I realized that I've been thinking about this for an hour and a half and my blood pressure is through the roof, you know, but I'm not mad. I mean, I'm not angry. I'm not yelling. I'm not screaming. I'm not wanting to hit anything, but that is a form of anger for sure.
Yeah.
And so very unhealthy. Like
low octane resent.
Yeah.
And like what you're having all these resentful feelings, but that's sort of like you drinking poison to hurt the other guy. Like the joke's kind of on you and me, you know?
Right.
When you indulge in it. And often the things that can make you the most angry are the things that don't have much at stake. They're actually trivial.
Right. And odds are Dave didn't mean anything by it. There was nothing malicious about it.
Right.
You know, but I'm just sitting there nitpicking at it.
Here's another lowism. You'll like this, Adam. People often do things that annoy us, but not to annoy us. Mm. If you think someone's deliberately intending harm or to upset you, then that's gonna be additionally upsetting. So, you know, kind of take an immediate stake. What's at stake here? Is this really trivial? I mean, it's not life and death.
Right.
That's not trivial. Sex is not trivial. Your marriage, friendship is not trivial. Your finances, that's not trivial. Your job, that's not trivial. Where to go to dinner, that's trivial. Who is right about the ball game argument about, you know, that's trivial.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. When we get back, maybe we can talk about like ways that we've figured out how to remedy this and then jump into other topics. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Cheers to Jesus. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. Sitting here with the Patrick Coffin, hanging out, talking about anger, getting really upset with Juan back here, just staring through the back of our heads. Ridiculous.
Which is weird. That makes your head see-through, if you think about it.
So right before the break, we were talking about not necessarily a verbal out, like, an anger that is out outlashing towards other people, but kind of like interiorly angry,
like a passive aggressive
type of anger.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I read from it was a list of humility by Saint Mother Teresa. She said one of her points was accept small irritations with good humor.
Yeah,
and so it's if you learn to laugh at yourself, if you learn to laugh at like what the situation is, it's very hard to stay upset. And so that's kind of something that I've tried to do to help this issue that I have of just mulling things over and over again in my head is like, just laugh about it. Like, yeah, I said something stupid, or yeah, I, you know, something happened where, you know, the situation humiliated me or something like, you
right.
know, but that was funny, you know,
mm-hmm.
so everybody laughed. So anyway,
and sometimes it helps rather than stay in the internal mental loop, say it out loud. That guy hurt my feelings. I was embarrassed. When you say it, it's like my wife and I have this agreement that if it's not written down, it doesn't exist. Like stuff we're supposed to do together or something, you know, a meeting or whatever. If it's not written down, it doesn't exist.
Not on the calendar. It didn't happen.
If it's not spoken, right. So sometimes just saying it can help calm you down because you kind of have, you can get your arms around it once you hear the words that, that nail the truth of it.
Yeah, kind of let it out.
Yep.
For me, the cure to being angry, because sometimes I'll, sometimes it's like the little things that someone will do and for no reason can ruin your whole day. Like, you know, something little happens and you just can't let it go. I have learned that if I remind myself that God's will and God's plan for my life encompasses all things. And this is part of his, like, no, this is just what was supposed to happen to me today. It's like, oh yeah. Okay. And I'm down. I know that I'm down with God's will. And so this must be part of it. And I'm really glad it, now all of a sudden, I'm glad it happened to me. You know?
It's the best thing that could have happened to you that day.
Right. Exactly. And so
he permitted it for some reason for your good. If you love him, not some, not most, all things work to good for those who love God.
Because I've had it happen to me enough times where the thing that I thought was so terrible and the worst ended up being the best thing. You know, it put me in the right position or the, you know, it allowed for something else to happen. Where it's, you know,
yeah, it's like when somebody says you're acting just like your father and like you get all upset about it. And then like 30 minutes later, you're like, my father was a wonderful man.
Yeah. So what of it?
Patrick, you said the last segment you were talking about, you know, that's just the way I am. That's just the way I am.
Well, you should just be different.
Well, it kind of is the same way with lust, right? Or same sex attraction with somebody. That's kind of their movement of, oh, it's just the way I am.
Yeah,
and there's a sin of omission there, right? I think that, like, obviously you have concupiscence. Obviously you struggle with certain sins. But if you're not striving for holiness, if you're not striving to even take baby steps to perfection, then that is a sin of omission. And I kind of feel like that a lot of men today struggle more with, and I know this may sound absurd, but I think that they struggle more with sins of omission, things that they do not do, rather than things that they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's valid, yeah. Because they're hidden. They're hidden. And often, I mean, you can wound someone through inaction, through passive aggressive, right? So you're angry and you sabotage things by maybe saying you'll do something and you don't. And your inaction is meant to be the punishment.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all have these sort of two voices within us. We've got two options. We've got, you know, option A and option B in terms of, so we can't, given the examples you two gave, both may have hurt you. There may have been a legitimate reason to be angry, but then you're able, because we're made in God's image and likeness, we can choose our attitude toward those feelings. We can nurse them. We can kind of count our tears and be vengeful. I'll get that guy. Or we can say, this really bugged me. It was wrong what he did to me. And so now I have a choice. I can will that person's good by making an act of forgiveness. I may never want to see them again. I may not want to be buddy-buddy and do high fives. But unless I forgive my brother who's trespassed against me, I can't be saved.
Mm-hmm.
And our Lord put that in the only prayer that he taught the disciples. So forgiveness is not, it's not about emotion. It's about the decision to will the good of someone who's hurt you, even if you never see them again, even if it's the person deceased. You know, I just lost my dad in April 27th. I was with him when he died, and we had just phenomenal conversations. And my dad and I had a very difficult relationship in my first 15 years. It was tough. that'd be belong to a different show. But we did have crucial conversations in the last week. And one of the things that makes it hard to grieve is that, well, we're all imperfect. And one of the things my dad would say, because we try to, you know, get him to drink more water. Hey, Dad, drink water. His phrase was, I'm not a water drinker. You drive me nuts. What do you mean you're not a water drinker? You mean like you're black, you're Asian, you're Norwegian, you're not a water drinker?
Right.
No, you're choosing not to drink water, which is really good for you to do.
Right.
So we all fall prey to that. It's almost like a genetic fallacy. I am, therefore I do. Whether it's same-sex attraction or someone who's prone to anger or someone who, you know, they just can't stop swiping their card when their wife says not to. Oh, hey, I'm generous, or it's just, you know, my nature. That's not true. That is a lie.
Well, and it takes, you know, an examination, a daily examination of conscience to understand the sins of omission. You know, you have to know thyself in mm-hmm. order to know that I'm not getting better at mm-hmm. this. It seems like I'm not being able to grow in holiness in this aspect of my life. And that is something, Dave, you and I have talked about on the show many of times, is the importance of an examination of conscience.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And if you if you're saying, oh, that's just the way I am, that's just an attitude of, I don't want to get any better.
Right.
I'm fine just mm-hmm. the way I am, mm-hmm. and I have no interest. And if that's the kind of man that you are, then you're probably at risk listening to this show.
Valid. Valid. I mean, St. Paul made it very clear that those who are angry, those who are lustful, those, I mean, he had a litany of things that were sins, and one of them was anger, and they said, those who are angry do not enter the kingdom of heaven.
Yeah.
Yep. Wrathfulness. Yep.
So even if you, true. Jesus said, even if you say raka or something that means like fool to your brother,
mm-hmm.
He had very strong words for something that was like not even that.
He typically did.
Yeah, his words were forceful. Yeah. Right. They have power.
Yeah, he was not. You mixed him up with someone who was interested in the Lewis Harris poll of the situation. But some of these insights, getting back to the gear for a moment, Overcoming Sinful Anger, the book by Father Tom Moreau, there's a lot of wisdom outside even the Christian or the biblical tradition. One of them comes from the Cherokee legend. Can I just read it to you? It's very short. It's called The Two Wolves Inside.
Sure.
And it goes directly to anger and how it tears apart relationships. An old man once said to his grandson, who was angry over an injustice received from a friend, let me tell you a story. I too at times have felt a great hate for those who have taken so much with no sorrow for what they did. But hate, he said to his grandson, wears you down and does not hurt your enemy. It's like taking poison and hoping your enemy will die. I've struggled with these feelings many, many times. He went on, it's as if there are two wolves inside me. One is good, does no harm. He lives in harmony with all around him. He doesn't take offense when no offense was intended. He will fight only when it's right to do so and in the right way. But the other wolf, the other wolf's full of anger. The littlest thing will set him into a fit of temper. He fights everyone all the time for no reason. He can't think because his anger and hate are so great. Sometimes it's hard to live with these two wolves inside me, for both of them try to dominate my spirit. The boy looked intently into his grandfather's eyes and asked, which one wins, Grandpa? Grandfather smiled and quietly said, the one I feed.
Good ending.
That's great.
Yeah, I like that.
Forming a habit by your decision that you take about your angry feelings.
And you know what forming good habits are?
Virtue.
Virtues.
Yeah. You know what the Latin root of virtue is?
Fear.
Man. Fear.
Man.
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 Manly. Sorry. That sounded a little bit
That's pretty good.
Manly.
But I think you're right, Patrick. Yeah. I think that, I mean, there's never a good reason to lose your peace. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's never a good reason, you know, whatever you feed, if you're feeding the negative, you're going to lose your peace. And there's never a reason to lose your peace. There's never a good reason.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many times that that's happened to me where it's like, there was no point in me dwelling on this. There was no point in me playing that mind game with myself. It's not mm-hmm. going to lead to anything productive. And it's only going to lose my peace.
Yeah. Like, I catch myself having fictitious conversations with certain politicians where it's almost like I do this.
Dude, where, I want to hear this because like, I'm like, this is like Walter Mitty.
Like, your native right Patrick, Nancy Pelosi, I cannot tell you how many how many conversations I've had with her. Like, I'm on a YouTube channel where it's like, David Niles destroys Nancy Pelosi. You know, it's like,
Nancy Pelosi, oh.
Right. If I said that, she would have had nothing to say. I know it. And I'm like sitting there going on and on and on in my head. And it's just like, this is the dumbest thing ever. You know,
because there's never going to be a situation. But you know what? If you meet Nancy Pelosi, oh, man, that'll be an epic conversation.
No, I don't want it to be an epic. I mean, yeah. So,
you want her eviscerated.
Yeah. So it's like, I just don't need to feed that wolf. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Abraham, this desire to correct someone else and to be the one in the right party can infect marriages. And Dr. Lowe calls it. Symbolic victories. They don't mean anything, but they're symbolic.
All right, when we get back, we're going to finish this up. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm so angry.
Please welcome Bruce Banner.
Seriously though, I am pretty angry about something right now. It's how hot it is in this room.
I'm sorry, dude.
I don't know why. It's like,
I'm sorry. I have my shirt on and everything. There's nothing else I can do.
Literally a sauna in here.
Yeah, it's very hot.
Would you fan me? Oh, that feels good.
Patrick, yep. we're talking about anger.
Juan is a good friend.
He is a really good friend.
He's also a delicious.
Everybody needs a Juan.
Wonderful salad.
Let's talk really quick about the difference between, we kind of touched on it, but I think that we need to go back and make sure we understand the difference between righteous anger and sinful anger, because there are times, especially in social media, that social media just is a crazy world.
Yes.
That the line between righteous anger and sinful anger is very quick. You can go from I'm mad about this because it's an injustice to somebody to all of a sudden it becomes a sinful anger.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Patrick?
I think it's not an answerable question necessarily because
I like to ask those kind of questions.
Yeah,
that's a good interviewer, yeah. Right?
The answer is pie.
Yeah.
No, I think it leads down a rabbit hole of introspection that leads into, you know, multiple dead ends. All you can do, I think, is what you, Adam and David, you were emphasizing the need for ongoing examination of conscience. You can have a righteous cause that whether pick any of the righteous causes, right? Let's get rid of,
abortion.
Okay, abortion, sex trafficking, polluting the environment. Those are all just causes. And it's good to have an irascible appetite toward them and that the will to fix that wrong, to right things and to create balance and set things right. But even though the cause is right, over time, you can, in a prideful way, think of yourself as the white knight who has the only solution to it. And people have to start listening to you. Or you can begin thinking about other things about which you're resentful, and it kind of clouds the righteous part of whatever cause you were working towards. So everything that we experience is experienced through the lens of an imperfect fallen person who's a sinner. So even righteous anger is going to be somewhat tainted by everything else about us, which is so imperfect and so in need of God's grace.
Yeah.
This is why it's so important to have a good coach. I.e. spiritual director, even if it's not, you don't want to put that label on it, fine, but someone, a regular confessor. When you go to someone time and time again, and if anger is one of your besetting sins, if you stop kind of confessor hopping because you're embarrassed, you know, I can't believe I have to say that again.
Yeah.
The growth is immediate because the next time you're tempted to give into anger, the first thought is, do I really want to confess this again? Answer, no. So right. I'm going to put on that mask. It's not a phony mask. It's a mask of charity. And I'm not going to unburden. I'm not going to kind of let go and have that thrill of having the so-called Irish trigger hit. Mm-hmm. So having a spiritual director is very important, because often they have an insight about you that you don't have. That answered your question in what way, Adam?
Well, it kind of helps me with the next question I had is about, we talked about being angry towards other people. What about being angry with yourself? A lot of times I feel like that men struggle with not being able to forgive themselves, even after going to confession, even after knowing that Jesus has already forgiven you. But you cannot solve a problem if you're angry with yourself, if you are lamenting over what you've done and you're angry with yourself. You can't push things forward. I think a lot of men struggle with being angry with themselves.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I think men who are prone to big blow-ups are also prone to shame, because they're embarrassed at what made them blow up again. Maybe they made their kid cry. They made their wife upset. And so they go between these two poles of self-assertion to a sinful degree through sinful anger, and self-abasement through shame. And both are dysfunctional.
Yeah. Another link to lust right there. Very similar.
Yeah, that's a very similar. There's a similar dynamic there. In fact, quick sidebar, Dr. Patrick Carnes, one of the pioneers of sexual addiction psychological strategies, has an article somewhere. I'll try to find it and get it to you guys. But the title is Eroticized Rage. Eroticized Rage. You can see this at work in the phenomenon of revenge porn, where someone who's been wounded and is so angry, they're willing to take, naked pictures of a loved one and display them in public. It's a powerful form of passive aggression, revenge porn.
Wow.
That is
But
deep.
I'm not sure if one can bestow divine forgiveness on oneself. I'm admitting my jury's not out on the whole dynamic and reality of forgiving yourself. We are commanded to love ourselves. Self-love is implicit in the greatest commandment, isn't it? Mm-hmm. What does Jesus say? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. So the presumption there is that you love yourself, and that's the measure with which you're supposed to love your neighbor. But if you're, after you've received absolution, if our Lord Jesus Christ has said, I absolve you through the priest, and you have been, brought back home and you are absolved, and you're still angry at yourself, I think you're struggling with pride.
Yep.
I think you think you should be stronger and you're not, and you don't want to see yourself as you are, which is weak. And humility, I think a lot of people, and this ties to humility. A lot of people think humility is self-abasement. Oh, I'm just a little worm. I'm nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine Bishop Sheen, if Bishop Sheen was complimented on his oratorical skills, if he said, well, no, not really. No, he knew he had a gift. Mm-hmm. Humility is the truth about yourself.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And I think it's disguised pride.
It's seeing you as God sees you and knowing yourself in that way. Patrick, let me ask you another. You mentioned how you struggled with some anger when you were younger. So just in your own experience, do you think that anger, is it something that exists by itself, or does it usually have a complementary, like, deeper issue? Are there people out there who are just angry and that's just their problem? Oh, I'm just angry. Is there typically a reason? Is there something else?
It's a good question. I don't think anger is a state. I don't think someone can legitimately say, I am angry because I'm an angry person. I mean, all effects have causes. Mm-hmm. I think if someone is perpetually angry, if they're always in that kind of slow burn, burning ember negativity. Yeah. They're the Wendy Weiner. The glass is not only half empty, it's like smashed, complete pessimism. In my experience, and I'm no expert here, I'm only an expert in sinning. That's my expertise. But
you should try to stop. You should try to stop sinning.
Oh, yeah.
That's Bob, really.
Thanks for calling me out there. Yeah. I didn't say I used the expertise. I just added. I think a lot of anger in adults stems from family of origin unresolved issues and a lack of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Dr. Rick Fitzgibbons would be a great guest if you haven't had him, by the way. He's one of the leading experts in the clinical benefits of forgiveness. He and his writing partner, Dr. Robert Enright. It's powerful insights into how forgiveness as a decision is accompanied by things that are tremendously healing. Because you're letting go. You're letting go of the chains that have bound you that you can't control. So I think habitual anger and angry habits are usually caused by family of origin issues, primarily about the, often the father. Could be the mother too, but mm-hmm. have you noticed that men are usually the ones who commit crimes of passion?
Yeah.
Crimes of desperation. If you look at the prison population, most of it's men. If you look at a lot of the news headlines about acts of violence and robbery, it's men. It's men with anger problems. Now, right. this goes to a whole other set, which could be a whole different show, about the crisis in fatherhood and the breakdown of the family and the lack of support systems.
Yeah.
You're going to see this, I hate to say it, in high-profile suicides where people are hopeless and they're angry and they glom onto the decision someone else made to escape this life, whether it's Robin Williams or Kate Spade, or Anthony Bourdain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a thing called the Werther effect. They do create copycat mm-hmm. suicides.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of it is family of origin conflicts that were never resolved and feelings that they're afraid of because they were never, in my case, people listening right now who are raised in alcoholic homes know that there's some unwritten rules there in that environment. Don't talk, don't feel, don't trust. So if you have a deep feeling of anger.
Conceal, don't feel. As,
right,
exactly, as Frozen right. put it.
Yeah, Frozen, right, sort of emotionally constipated. Great book, movie recommendation about Frozen, someone who's frozen. It's more grief than anger, is Jim Sheridan's movie, In America.
Okay.
He's the guy who did My Left Foot and In the Name of the Father. In America, beautiful movie. Hmm. So, that's my homespun answer.
There was a saint that said that, and I can't remember who it is off the top of my head, but he said that anger is the vice to all other vices. Hmm. Anger opens up to all other vices.
That kind of makes sense.
It's interesting.
Which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. So it's because it's so emotional. The word right. emotion comes from the word meaning to move. So emotions are, it even has the word motion in it.
It's fascinating, isn't it? What do we say about music that makes us cry? It was moving.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's emotional. We have a Council of Man member named Rich Lamb. He's got a blog called The Angry Dad.
No, Grumpy Dad.
Grumpy Dad. Yeah, yeah. But he is admittedly, kind of an angry guy, and his blog's about his struggles to
So check that out.
Cope with that.
Okay, so patrickcoffin.com.
Coffinnation.com. Yeah, this is a membership site for people who want to rebuild the culture one little heart at a time through personal development and looking at the person in the mirror and conquering that person. Making better families, healthier marriages, and better communities.
Patrick, thanks so much for hanging out with us, man.
It's a pleasure, guys. You guys are doing amazing things. Frankly, I'm a little bit jealous of your marketing fonts and so on. You've got the retro thing going on. We got to do a joint venture. Promise me, we have to do some kind of blood oath to make this happen. Talk is cheap.
Juan, get the blade.
Yep, let's do this.
All right.
Thanks so much.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Cheers to Jesus.